Don't wanna be a player.
I'm not a player, I just crush a lot.
Show. I'm Ryan Balanchy, and it is great to have you here with us post Players Championship. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Balanchy. Get a hold of the show and Golf News Net every which way on social media at Golf News Net. And we are presented by BetDSI.com. You can find each and every week we use their odds on our PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, you name the tour odds posts, and we like to use them because they give us a great idea of in real time where the money's moving and how that affects the odds for each and every player in the field each and every week. So check out BetDSI.com. Even if you are not in a jurisdiction where you can legally bet on sports, you can still use BetDSI.com if you're a fantasy player to get your fix each and every week and get a good glimpse of intel into which players that maybe you should be picking for your fantasy lineups. Okay, so I wanted to do a podcast, the first of actually three you will see this week from us. And I wanted to do it post-Players Championship one, really to kind of talk about the experience of Blog Cabin. It's a little bit of inside baseball, but maybe not. For those of you who kind of love golf and love golf social media and Twitter in particular, I think you'll find this pretty good. And then we have two other podcasts that we actually recorded while we were at the Players. So on Wednesday, they had a First Timers Day. And they've done this for a number of years now. Back to even the last time I covered the tournament, I think, was in 2012, and that was available to us then. And what they did, I think it was the first year they did it actually, they got all of the first-time participants in the Players at that time in 2012 in the media interview room, put them in chairs around the room, just let people kind of go at them and get them some extra exposure. And talk to guys like J.J. Colleen and Matt Every and Graham Dillette. It was a good time. And so this time, and they've continued that tradition, right? And they had allowed us, me, as the Golf News, as Golf News Net, and the guys from No Laying Up, Sally and Tron Carter, and Kyle Porter actually tagged along for that podcast. And we went into rooms in the permanent scoring building for the Players' Championship. So I took number 9 scoring, they took number 18 scoring. And the PGA Tour was kind enough to fetch players for us as they were getting done with their obligation out on where they were congregated now, which is just outside the clubhouse at TPC Sawgrass, first thing in the morning. Just get it started, get it going, let them get on with their day and go practice, make final preparations for the tournament. And we had three guys come through. And so you're probably thinking, why are there only two interviews? Well, the first was with Tyrone Van Aswegen. He's from South Africa. You may know him as the Ass Wagon, because that's the way it looks to us. But we talked for about 20 minutes, and he was wonderful. I was a fan of his before. He's really affable on social media. And generally speaking, I like South Africans. I just love their attitude toward life. And Tyrone fit that perfectly. Easygoing, introspective, smart. It offered great insight. Now, his insight was around kind of breaking through that top tier while maintaining his status as a guy who knows he's still developing his game, but has the game to hang in there pretty well and finish in the 70 to 100 portion in FedEx Cup points each year. Now, he missed the cut, but we had a great conversation, and I think it still carries through, even though it kind of hinges and kind of leads with the Players' Championship. It gets philosophical in general, and I think it's valuable. The second conversation is with Brett Stegmaier. And Brett Stegmaier was also a first-timer. He's struggling this season. He unfortunately also missed the cut at the Players' Championship. But Brett and I talked more, not as much about TPC Sawgrass, although we did touch on that to some extent. But we also talked about the grind that guys who come through the Web.com Tour and Web.com Tour Finals have to go through just to get into tournaments and maintain status. Not only for him, who was a guy who did that through the Web.com Tour Finals and then pretty much sewed up his card through Vegas with a second-place finish, but through friends who are also in similar situations. And what his suggestions would be to make sure that the PGA Tour perhaps puts proper weighting on the guys who are the best players right now instead of protecting the guys who have been around for years and years and maybe don't need to be playing as many events. So the third interview that we did will probably not see the light of day, but I do want to explain it to you. So the tour came to me and said, hey, would you like to talk to Patrick Cantlay? And I'm a fan of his golf. He's a tremendous player. And he has about 10 minutes. And I said, okay, that's fine. We can do something in 10 minutes. So what they didn't tell me is that he had told the tour he would have an hour of availability that he showed up 30 minutes late to and had just done a radio interview where you really can't hide because that's live and a Golf Channel interview where you can't hide because that's live. So he probably wasn't feeling this to begin with. But then I'm the last guy. So he comes in and and he's a guy who does not speak in long sentences to begin with. And I don't know why he does that, whether it's just who he is. Maybe he's shy. I get the sense that he is. Maybe it's something more than that, which I'm by no means a PhD or an MD, so I can't talk about that. Is it maybe he just didn't give a shit, which is totally possible. That has happened before too, and sometimes you just get a bad one. Or he just kind of looked down on the type of questions that I was asking. And I was trying to get him to talk about how he pursues golf, how he plays tournament golf, how did that inform his strategy, not only around Sawgrass, but also in general. And it was just, hey, like, I play to win. Okay, well, how does that work out? I just try to win. And he gave me, in probably like 15 questions that I asked, trying to beat the bush at similar things. He gave me one good answer. And then about 12 and a half minutes into the interview, she was like, all right, great talk to you. See you later. Just literally walked out. Like, he'd had enough. And quite frankly, so had I. I didn't have to talk to him. I mean, if we were not on PGA Tour property and I was not credentialed by the PGA Tour, I would have stopped the conversation 30 seconds in. Like, if we were at a bar, I would have just turned the other way and that would have been the end of it. But not in that setting. So that's not going to see the light of day, likely. I am still a fan of his golf. I am not a fan of how he chose to treat me, but I also have the option of choosing not to treat him very well either. So that's kind of where we'll leave it. But the interviews with Tyrone and Brett were wonderful, and hopefully you'll take a listen to them as we release them in the next couple of days after this podcast. So today is Wednesday. We'll do this one today. On Thursday, we'll do Tyrone, and Friday, we'll do Brett, and we'll have them all together for you. Okay, so let's talk about the players a little bit. First, there was a lot of intrigue about Blog Cabin. I have to tell you, there was some on the ground, which was kind of funny. There were some butthurt folks that were upset that basically this group of seven people got into a house that was, full disclosure, paid for by the PGA Tour. Now, we paid to get down there. We paid to pretty much do everything down there other than stay in the house. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of quid pro quo here. And to be truthful, when the PGA Tour approached me and this group of guys, and I'll kind of detail who's in that group in a little bit, but when the PGA Tour approached us, they didn't say, hey, we want you to come down and just spin your coverage positive about the Players' Championship and talk it up as the greatest thing ever. They said, well, we want you to come down, hang out, experience this championship, experience Jacksonville to some extent, but largely Ponte Vedra Beach and Jacksonville Beach, and just see what you think. And I covered the Players several times before, so it wasn't like I'd never seen this championship in action. I know it's a great tournament. I know it's really well run, and I've never had a problem saying that. You know, I'm a big fan of the Players' Championship. But what interested me was the idea of having these guys together in one place at the same time to talk about this championship, kind of create content, and also, again, the opportunities that were afforded to us in terms of access, particularly these interviews on Wednesday, which were fun. And I had a great time. I mean, I don't know what to say other than that. We had a great time. Just so you kind of have an idea of the rundown of the guys that were there. So Chris Solomon and Tron Carter were there from No Laying Up. Kyle Porter from CBSSports.com. Brendan Porath was there from SB Nation. Adam Sarson was there. He works for The Score as his day job, but also runs AdamSarson.com and is prolifically awesome on Twitter. We had Andy Johnson from The Fried Egg, who I had never met in person. And if you don't subscribe to The Fried Egg's newsletter, you're missing out if you love kind of quick-hitting newsletter, but also great insight into architecture and just high-level golf in general. Andy's a great player. So actually, everyone played well the days that we played. In particular, Tron and Solly and Andy are just tremendous golfers. They were all great people. And Kevin Van Valkenburg from ESPN.com came down. He was staying on his own. Came over a couple of nights to our house and just kind of had what, you know, kind of dubbed take sessions. Like, talk about golf, talk about what's going on, and kind of have some strong opinions one way or another about what's happening in the world of golf. And just had an awesome time. I mean, we hit some of the great spots around Ponte Vedra in Jacksonville. We went to the second Nona Blue location, which was awesome. Graham McDowell was there that night. We had a great meal there, great drinks, great service. We went to Taco Lou, which is kind of this legendary establishment in the Ponte Vedra area, kind of more in Jack's Beach, their permanent location. But they have a taco stand on the 12th hole at Sawgrass, and it's kind of become the stuff of legend. It's just a hop-in place all throughout the tournament. Their tacos, I would eat literally every day for a year and probably not get tired of them. They were fantastic. So was the queso, so was the guac. They had a thing called a deer and a beer where you had a, I don't understand the moniker, but they gave you a shot of tequila and a beer, Corona, or you could do Dos Equis, you know, whatever you wanted to do. We went to Topgolf in Jacksonville one night, well, closer to Jacksonville, wasn't quite Jacksonville one night. Had an awesome time there. Brian from the VIP group took care of us. We had a Ryder Cup style competition. We were greeted on Wednesday at breakfast at 7 a.m. at the house by senior players champion Bernard Langer. Had a conversation with him for 20 minutes. No Laying Up recorded that. That podcast is actually up on their website, nolayingup.com, if you want to check that out too. You can hear me asking like two or three questions. So that was a great time. And we rode bikes to and from the tournament every day because the house is inside the gates at Sawgrass. So we were no more than a mile and a half away, probably more realistically like a mile and a quarter. So rode bikes in every day, walked the grounds, had an awesome time. I mean, what more do you want in covering a golf tournament? And it was one of the best experiences I've ever had covering a tournament. It was also one of the least productive, I have to admit. Media centers are not always the best place to do work, but even less so being in a house with guys you really like and a house that is loaded with Grey Goose, a zillion cases of Mick Ultra, which might not get you drunk but keeps you buzzed, and wine and good food. I mean, we didn't really have food. We could have bought food, but we never did. We just went out to dinner each night. But we played some great golf, too. We went over to Jack's Beach Golf Club one afternoon. Me, Porter, Adam Sarson, and KVV played like 12 holes, I think it ended up being, but I played 9. Really fun golf course. Got to spend some time with Steve Elkington in his fantastic Big Show two-story RV. That was great. You'll hear more about our relationship with Elk and his secret golf group in the weeks to come. You've probably seen some of it if you go to golfnewsnet.com. You'll see more of that coming. We're really excited about what's in the hopper with that. And then we just had it was just a great week. Again, a great time experiencing the Players' Championship. I have always been and will continue to be a Players' fan. It's not a major. It's not trying to be. Maybe for a while it tried to be, but it's not now. It is firmly what it is. It is firmly unique in that it's not a major. It is the Players, and it embraces Jacksonville. It embraces the corporate nature of the PGA Tour. It embraces the non-golf fan and the golf fan alike. It embraces families and people in their mid-20s and divorcees in their 40s and dudes in their 30s just trying to get away for a day. It embraces everybody, and I really like that. It's the same about the golf course. It embraces every kind of player. And that's why we got the champion we got. And that is a hell of a segue into Siwoo Kim. So I came home on Saturday night. I wanted to be a good dad, be home with my kids, my wife, my mom, my mother-in-law, who was down here helping my wife with our kids while I was away, and be here for Mother's Day. So I didn't see a single shot Siwoo Kim hit in person all week. And yet, on Sunday, I couldn't walk away but impressed with what he accomplished. Taking the round unto itself, you know, he shot 369, it was bogey-free, he parred the final 10 holes, he made 3 birdies in the first 8 holes, he hit less than half the greens in regulation, and he managed to make it look easy. He won by 3. I thought that was really fascinating for a guy who said after the fact, hey, I've won before, I won the Wyndham Championship, he did that last year. So he's going for a second win in less than a year. He's free and clear for a couple more seasons. He's got nothing to worry about, or had one more season of exemption left after this one. Nothing to worry about. And he went out there and put on a tremendous show that looked like a guy who was 32 years old in full command and wasn't going to get caught no matter what happened. And that just does not typically happen from a guy that age in this tournament. In fact, it's never happened. He's the youngest player's champion. He beat Adam Scott's mark from 12 years ago or 13 years ago. So he's the youngest player's champion. He has 2 wins on the PGA Tour. And I got to be honest, I don't think a lot of people are going to talk about this appropriately because this is a big deal. And the reason he's not going to get the play is because he's Korean. And that's just our natural reaction as English-speaking folks, particularly Americans. I know I can't speak for all of you overseas who listen in Dublin and London and elsewhere, but Americans tend to not be fascinated by non-Americans. They tend to be not disinterested, but not fascinated. And so, they have Siwoo Kim win, and he understands English. He prefers not to speak it because it's a little bit of a struggle, still working on that. And so he has a translator, and the translator, of course, naturally gets made fun of because the translator also isn't speaking perfect English and trying to translate words, particularly in a language like Korean, that don't necessarily make a 100% perfect transfer over to English. And so NBC kind of interviewed Ian Poulter, like he got the winner's interview. Like, hey, buddy, congrats on finishing tied for second. How about that shot to make bogey so you lost by 3 instead of finishing solo second? And, you know, Siwoo Kim got an interview, obviously, but a little bit different. The remarkable thing to me, outside of the context of the performance, that how well he played, is how horrible of a year he's had. He's had back problems throughout the season. He's working on a swing change with Sean Foley. I know you Sean Foley truthers out there are likely to say, hey, just another Sean Foley client, man, another back problem. Which, hey, we can talk about that in another podcast. But nonetheless, a 22-year-old kid dealing with back issues, having a terrible year, lots of withdrawals, lots of missed cuts. I mean, he had a good finish at Valero. I think it was T22. But if you told me you saw this coming at 650-1 coming into the week, then you have a perfect window into the future, and I would love to get to know you better. But this is how golf works sometimes. You get this kind of... You got the talent there. You just need to be healthy enough for 4 days, and you need to be locked in enough for 4 days on the right course and the right conditions. And any of those guys out there on the PGA Tour, at least the first 150 of them that have status, can win on the right place at the right time. This was the right place at the right time for Siwoo Kim. And he withdrew from this week's AT&T Byron Nelson. He withdrew from that with a back problem. So I don't know when we'll see him again. Frankly, to him, it doesn't really matter. I assume it's going to be in time for the U.S. Open, but it doesn't matter to him. He's got a 5-year exemption on the PGA Tour, so if he felt comfortable before on Sunday, knowing that he could get away with whatever finish that he had, whatever finish it was, because he still had another year of exemption on him, another season of exemption on him, then I don't know how having a 5-year free and clear period is going to work for him. It sounds like it's going to be great. The question to me, looking at Wu's game, Siwoo Kim's game, he's long. I mean, he's got effortless power. He beats the crap out of the ball. He's aggressive like a young guy should be. I mean, if you looked at that fairway wood that he hit on 18, he could have blasted a 3-iron way right, literally chipped it down the fairway a couple more times, and still won pretty comfortably. Chose not to do that. Took an aggressive line. Maybe a miss hit. Don't know. Chose an aggressive line with a 3-wood. Didn't miss the water by much. And then got on and made it look pretty, you know, got it just a little short, made it look routine. And that was a gutsy play. But that's emblematic of a guy who's 22, not a guy who felt like, hey, I'm going to be the best in the world and do everything. So, I mean, that's gutsy. Again, he's dead last PGA Tour rankings this year from tee to green. Now, of course, he hasn't played a lot. He's injured. All those things, they all factor in. So moving forward, I've been asked a couple of times in radio interviews the last couple of days, what do you think about Siwoo Kim? Is he going to be a breakout superstar? Is he going to be a dud in 5 years? And I think the right answer is, we don't know. We don't really know. He won this championship under odd circumstances, given his season performance. He also won in the middle of a swing change and back problems. Could this be a one-off? Sure, could be, but it's hard to win the Players' Championship. We've had some dud winners in recent years, but if you look at the guys who have won since this championship moved to May in 2007, you go down the line. Phil, Sergio, Henrik Stenson, I mean, Tim Clark was in there, so you're like, eh, whatever. KJ Choi was a good winner. Kuchar, I mean, KJ Choi was kind of like a career achievement award in winning that because it was kind of the best tournament he's ever going to win. Matt Kuchar, again, same thing, probably never going to win a major, but best tournament he's going to win. You got a Ricky Fowler win in there. You got a Jason Day win in there. You got a Tiger Woods victory in there. I mean, the winners are not bad. They're great winners at the Players' Championship. Martin Keimer was in there in 2014, beat out Jordan Spieth, who was trying to win his first go at it. And it was just, I mean, Siwoo Kim's like the one outlier other than Tim Clark, who also is a really good player, but also doesn't fit kind of the same character, same resume of the guys that the career records of the guys that have won in May. That's no matter. That doesn't necessarily portend one way or the other whether he's a fluke or not. So what I want to know from him is, all right, get healthy. Get healthy, be as healthy as you can get at 22. Go finish out this season healthy whenever you can. Let's see where those results leave you. And then let's give him next season. Let's take a long-term view on Siwoo Kim and see if that leads to a better assessment of where he is. And then we can know, okay, this guy should have big things ahead of him, or he's still working on it. I think for him, he was hit and miss in his rookie season. He has the capacity to be brilliant. His best stuff is unflappable. But his worst stuff, not so much. And that, I believe, is one of the biggest gaps between players who are top-ranked in the world, say top 50, and players who are not. And that is winning without your best stuff, or managing to just contend without your best stuff. That's something a lot of guys have kind of aged into doing. Dustin Johnson, for example, past week, finished tied for 12th. He didn't have it, and he knew he didn't have it. Sergio Garcia crapped out on Sunday, but played well on Saturday, playing himself into a tournament that seemingly on Thursday and Friday, other than the ace, he had very little interest in. And rightfully so. I mean, I understand. Rory has this gear where he finds a way to contend when he just finds a way to find himself, find his best stuff late in a tournament, go on a run. That's how he contends without his best stuff. Loves the backdoor top 10. You got other guys like that. Siwoo Kim has to figure out for him, all right, I can't drive it this week. I got to find a way to get the ball in the hole, and I got to find a way to get the putter in my hand. How can I do that? And once I start to see that, I will buy in more into Siwoo Kim. I'm not saying I'm not going to buy into him, but that's my view. I love players who I know when I watch them, whether they have their best stuff or not, they're going to be able to figure out a way to get around a golf course. That's what makes the best players in the world the best players in the world. And everybody else kind of fighting for position and scraps and starts and stuff like that. And that's the bigger gulf between a high-level amateur or a very low-handicap amateur and those guys. They're even that much better. So I'm excited for Siwoo Kim. 5-year exemption's awesome. Gets him into a whole lot of stuff for the next 3 years. Gets him into 3 majors for the next 3 years. So we're going to be seeing a lot more of this guy. Not like this is just the win and you go away, like the John Deere Classic kind of deal. He's in. He's in for a few years now. So that's a big deal. And I think that the outcome for Ian Poulter was also fantastic. I found myself rooting for Ian Poulter one Sunday. I don't know why, other than to say that kind of this perception of injustice that the PGA Tour did not intentionally try to do it all. It was just kind of, hey, we forgot about this and we didn't apply it to major medicals in terms of the way the points are distributed. And Brian Gay's wife, or Brian Gay, caught it. To be honest, they probably caught it by looking at her story on it at golfnewsnet.com. But they caught it and they told the PGA Tour about it and said, hey, you know, you should look into this. And turns out they both deserve to start in the Players and fulfill their major medical extension because of that change. And Poulter was up against it. He knew that if he, coming down the stretch, if he could finish in the top two or top three, maybe even win the thing, then he would pretty much lock up his season, lock up his card for next season, and have plenty of money. So he played safe, laid up from like 220 yards from the right rough, 116. He said he kind of had a tough to grasp behind the ball, couldn't get the club on it, didn't want to mess up, so he laid up, made par, 117, played for the middle of the green, which Brandel Chamblee went apoplectic about because he didn't play for the pin, knowing that Kim was behind him on an easy par 5 and really needed to apply some pressure. I get that from Brant, both their perspectives. But he parred the hole, knowing that a 21-year-old kid was trying to win a huge championship, maybe put it on his bat instead of his own. And then on 18, hits a straight shank with the second shot, takes an unplayable, hits a miracle shot over trees from the gook. You know, he kind of cleared out the pine needles and made par from 6 inches. I mean, that's amazing. Finished T2, then you malign the guy if you're Brandel for choosing not to explicitly play for the win, not to be aggressive. He might have been playing for the win thinking Kim was going to kind of back up to him. But nonetheless, I was rooting for Ian Poulter. Now, I'm sure he will immediately do something to make me stop rooting for him. But for at least one afternoon, I was an Ian Poulter fan, and it felt pretty good. That's enough for me, probably. All right, that's going to do it for us this week, or at least this episode for this week of the 19th Hole Golf Show. Again, we have two more episodes coming this week, one with Tyron Van Aswegen and one with Brett Stegmaier. And if you would be so kind, if you listen to us through iTunes, give us a 5-star review if you have a chance. Really easy to do. Helps us reach more people. If you listen through some other service, you can shoot me an email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Hit me up on Twitter @RyanBallingy. And do us a huge favor. Join GNM Plus. And I know I'm reaching my hand out saying, please give us $10 a year. But for $10 a year, you're going to get some awesome things. One, a completely display ad-free experience on our site. Pages load faster. You don't have to scroll around stuff. Nothing's going to bug you. You get a great experience. Second, exclusive fantasy-related content that is, for, again, $10 a year. I mean, that's not even a dollar a week. It's not even close to a dollar a week. It's 20 cents a week. Amazing value for the stuff that we put together for you on the fantasy side. We're actually creating a new fantasy game. It's going to be really easy, a pick six game that you can then pick six guys, and if you can, based on the requirements that we set for your six guys, earn the most money, you win. It's free to play, but if you're a GNM Plus member and you come in first or highest among the GNM Plus members that participate, then you win a free prize each and every week if you're that person. And we've got some other more exclusive content that will be behind the wall analysis type stuff that's not necessarily fantasy related that we want to talk about and encourage people to check out GNM Plus. So again, $10 a year. It's less than some sleeves of golf balls, and supports our site, gives you a great experience, and we would greatly appreciate it. As many of you know, I have kind of split my time running this site for the last several years between working with Yahoo Sports and working on GNN, and increasingly spend more time on GNN. Just so you know, I will be spending dramatically less time with Yahoo, almost basically none, like a story a day now. So that's part of an effort of budget cuts over at the folks at Yahoo. I was fortunate just to even keep the small arrangement that I have with them because a number of good writers at other portions of their operation lost their opportunity entirely to write for Yahoo Sports. They need someone to work on golf. I'm that guy. So, but that means for me, I will be devoting more and more energy to Golf News Net. So if you want to either come to the site more often, always appreciate it. Or if you want to join GNN Plus, again, $10 a year, not much to ask. And great benefits, great potential benefits, too, in terms of pricing as well, and other giveaways that we'll do with testing. So anyway, thanks for your time on that. All right, so two more podcasts to come this week, Tyrone Van Ass Weekend, Brett Stagmeyer. And then next week we'll flood into the rest of the Texas swing. We'll talk about the Nelson. We'll talk about some other stuff. Hopefully I have a guest for you to kind of round it all out for you. So until later in the week, I'm Ryan Balogie. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.